Radio Ghana.
Live from the National Studios in Broadcasting House here in Accra, my name is George Asikri with this edition of Behind the News, where we bring you latest updates and detailed analysis of current happenings in Ghana. Tonight, authorities in Burkina Faso plan to spill the Bagri Dam. How ready is NADMO for the possible destructive flooding as a result? We hear from them shortly. Minority in Parliament wades into derogatory comments on people of the North by Deputy Minister of Food and Agriculture. What, beyond an apology, should appease an offended people? We find out tonight. And the aftermath of the NPP's delegate conference over the weekend. Is the strategy to fight corruption announced by the President the way to go? Details shortly. Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you all these stories on our show tonight. Your text messages should be sent via text message, text number 0266-026-941, 0266-026-941. Welcome back. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana to our very first story. I will investigate every corruption allegation made against any public official, but those who will make the allegation must be prepared to come forward with their evidence. Also, in spite of the initial setback it suffered in Parliament, the Office of the Special Prosecutor is coming. This was the message presented by the President of the Republic, Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo, at the NPP's 2017 National Delegate Conference, which took place in Cape Coast over the weekend. There were fraternal messages from other political parties and many issues came up. And commenting on the fraternal message by the NDC, Director of Operations of the Office of the President, Lord Cumming, said the Deputy General Secretary of the NDC should have added that officials of the erstwhile Mahama administration will be prosecuted. The question on the lips of many is the Office of the Special Prosecutor going to target only political office holders or civil servants are inclusive? We have on the line Vitus Azim. He is an anti-corruption campaigner and the Executive Director of Gender for Budget Advocacy Ghana. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening.
Well, so far, have you been impressed with the zeal by the state towards fighting corruption?
I think so far the issues are just pronouncements, public pronouncements, like the ones that were made before the elections. We haven't seen any action yet, so I wouldn't say I'm impressed.
But when you say action, is it dragging people to court physically that constitute action?
Driving people to court is not necessarily the only action. You see, that is usually the last stage. But sanctioning people, maybe demoting people, transferring people, charging people for money, making people to refund money, there are so many things that you can describe as, action. You don't necessarily have to drag people to court. If I've stolen money and there's a procedure for recovering those money, says to recover those money. If it's a serious matter, then you can prosecute. But if it's not a serious matter and you just take the money back, you may say that's fine. But you should be seen to actually acting on some of the allegations that have been taken against you. Even sanctioning, asking for an investigation is action.
But the President made it clear that he has instructed the security agencies and the other investigative bodies to make sure that they investigate allegations of corruption and other cases of such. So, is that not enough, at least from the top?
You see, instructing, just verbally announcing on a political platform that go ahead and investigate is not enough action. Because except the Commission on Human Rights and Civil Justice, these other security agencies are under the presidency, or at least they are under the ruling government. The Yoko is answerable to the Attorney General. The police, the IGP was just appointed when this government came into power. People see their positions as looking up to the president for those positions. So when you just make a political announcement that, oh, I've instructed them, what does that give them so much power that they can just go ahead and decide what allegations to investigate and what not? And can they just take those investigations to court? No.
But so in this instance, who do we blame? The people merely suspect or are of the fear. I mean, they fear because probably they have been appointed by the president. But there's no case of somebody taking action against even people in government, and the person has suffered some damage in terms of punishment from the state.
You see, if a new government comes in, I am the IGP and you remove me, or you ask me to go, or I'm the governor of the Bank of Ghana and you find a way of getting me out and bringing your person in, I mean, do I need to be told that I need to play to do what the current government, the one who has appointed me, wants me to do?
But you are a professional.
You are a professional. But did you go through a competitive interview? How were you appointed? When you have 110 ministers, how were they appointed? Have we ever had up to 100 ministers in this country? So you know that you were appointed because you belong to a particular political party, and so you owe some allegiance to that political party, and that there's a hierarchy that you have to show allegiance to.
And that is not absolute. When you take the director in charge of audits, who came out to say they are going to prosecute people cited in the Auditor General's report, for instance, he wasn't appointed by the current administration, but he's made it clear that he's going to go ahead with this. He's taking decision. Nobody has punished him, and he's moving ahead.
You see, the Auditor General and the Commissioner for Human Rights and Civil Justice, they are constitutionally mandated institutions. So if once they are appointed, you cannot remove them unless you have behaved in a certain way that you have to go to court to get the person, to establish that the person has not behaved well. And there's a procedure, like cause of, the judiciary. So they cannot be removed. So you expect them to behave in a certain way. They are different. But we're talking about the accountability institutions like the IOCO, the BNI, the police, all that. They can be removed tomorrow. And they have been replaced since the change of government.
That is just mere fear. My question is, should that be the case? Has somebody made an attempt and has suffered?
Nobody has probably made the attempt and has been suffered. Has suffered any sanction. But the question is, if there's a change of government and you're removed, what is the reason why you're removed? If you are not due for retirement, you have not done something wrong.
It's a political office, so you will go.
Pardon?
It's a political office.
So when there's a new government, you change. So if a new government brings you in, what is the thinking? The thinking is that you should behave in a way that is acceptable to the new government. Is that what it is?
Even when the president who appointed you tells you that go ahead and act in the best interest of the state?
The president has made that pronouncement on a public platform. Do we know what has been told the person in private conversation?
Since we don't know that, we take the president's words for the gospel truth.
You are a human being and you enjoy, you see, in Ghana and in most African countries, public positions are so attractive.
Okay.
Nobody wants to be removed from a public position. You have several cars at your disposal, drivers, bodyguards and all that. So sometimes the president may not even say, don't do this. But you yourself are already thinking that you don't want to do anything that would displease the president or the appointing authority. So we are just saying that until we are able to change all these things, just make a political announcement on a public platform that, I've instructed them to do that, is not enough.
Is that a convention we have as a country?
That is the convention. That's how I look at it. How many Delta Force people have been arrested and prosecuted for the atrocities that they committed?
But some are undergoing prosecution.
How long will that prosecution take?
Well, the lawyers say the wheels of justice grind slowly.
Yes. So that is the issue. You can deliberately, when the Attorney General, who is appointed by the President, decides to grind slowly, of course, that's what you expect to see.
So is it then the case that the fight against corruption is just going to be by mouth?
Until we see the action. The pronouncements are there by mouth, but now let's see the action. So far, already, there are some serious allegations against certain things, even in the presidency itself. We are waiting to see what the president will do. And then that will help us to determine whether the president is committed or not.
The president talks about the coming of the special prosecutor, and that despite the initial setback in parliament, it will surely come. Does that send a signal?
Again, it's a good signal, but it also has its weaknesses. Because, for example, the special prosecutor is going to be responsible to the attorney general. Even in the appointment of the special prosecutor, the attorney general has a hand in it. And as I said, the attorney general is a minister of state appointed by the president who can be removed tomorrow. So, again, that's already a problem.
But this whole question of special prosecutor and coming to deal with special cases of corruption, do you get a sense that it's going to target political office holders?
Well, I don't want to think that it's going to target political opponents.
Not opponent, but political office holders.
Well, the government has already made public pronouncement that they are going to prosecute former public officials or officials of the former government. That already makes it a false start. If you say you are going to prosecute public officials that are alleged to have engaged in corruption, but you say former public officials, you are already drawing a line that you are targeting former public officials, and that is not the best approach.
But if you are going by hierarchy, is that not the best way to start?
Why? Even if today there's a corruption act by your own government,
and there's a corruption by somebody yesterday, which one should go first?
Again, I didn't get that.
If there was corruption yesterday and there's corruption today, what would be wrong if the special prosecutor so decides to go for the yesterdays?
No, do the two at the same time. They are both equally wrong.
Okay.
Why do you wait? Why do you want to put your side? And you see, it's an issue of leadership. You must demonstrate that you are committed yourself by dealing with your own house before going to the other house.
So you expect that when the special prosecutor starts, those who should face the law should be from government?
There should be no discrimination.
Okay. We want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Very grateful, sir.
You're welcome. Have a good evening.
Vitus Azim is an anti-corruption campaigner, and he's the chief executive director of Gender for Budget Advocacy Ghana. We also have on the line a senior lecturer at the Department of Political Science, University of Ghana, Dr. Seydou Alidou. Good evening, Doug, and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, Chief. Please, how are you?
I'm very fine, Doug. So many issues came up, but since you are a political scientist, the former president proposed that certain positions within the party should not be elective. How does that play in our democratic strategies?
It's very difficult because it's a good suggestion. And the reason why he said that is based on the fact that there are some key positions in the party that need some technical expertise, some little bit of experience. And not everybody would be able to possess such an experience or expertise. So I understand the rationalization of that statement. But the issue is that one of the serious cardinal principles or features of a political party as a political institution is to have internal democracy and contestation. And one of the ways that you can achieve this element of contestation and internal democracy is to allow for every position within that party to be elected, to be contested and elected, so that at the end of the day, the people will decide on the experience and also the expertise that he was using as the justification for reserving that position not to be elected. If you open it up for contestation, people are going to determine who has the best of experience, the best of expertise, and the best of knowledge and experience to be able to take up that position. So I understand institutionalization, but I think that it will be democratic. Because in a democracy, and where political parties are supposed to espouse the element of contestations and elections, almost all positions in that particular organization should be contested, and then people vote for it.
Well, if that is the ideal, but looking at our case, it appears that if you have the cash, you get the job. So we might get to a stage where only the rich or influential will be practicing our democracy. Should that be the way?
So even under that circumstance, people will still prefer to have a say in determining who leads them or govern them, even no matter how fraudulent or monetized it is, than to just let somebody appoint somebody somewhere to lead them. So people still think that even democracy with all its defects, or electoral democracy with all its defects, is still better than a dictatorship or a restrictive government where people don't have a say in determining who leads them or who governs them. I understand the whole element of elections being bought, but it still boils down to the people that they should be discerning in the way they vote. So if you reserve, so which particular position is going to be elected and which positions in a party is going to be nominated? Do you understand?
Yes.
And once you do that, I've also read some of the amendments that were supposed to come off in the just recently held the NDC's National Delegates Congress. And one of the amendments that has been proposed by some members of parliament or members of parliament is the fact that some key positions within the constituency should be the MP or the parliamentary candidate should be given the opportunity to elect or nominate some key positions within the constituency portfolio rather than having them voted for. And the justification too is that people who haven't suffered for the party, people who are not grassroots members, just come up and take positions. And also, one of the proposals was also coming from Ashanti region. And then their call is also that before you get to the contest for the original chairman of the party, you might have started from the ward level and move through the hierarchy of position up to the point that you get there. So what's the basis? People are now realizing that our democracy, people with money buy the votes. People who are not committed to the grassroots and don't know the grassroots end up being leaders. And it creates a whole lot of problems. I agree to that concern, but I don't think the way to solve or address that issue is to invest power in one person to appoint everybody. Then at the end of the day, the flag bearer or the president of a party when they are in government or when they are in opposition will have to nominate or select all regional chairmen and everybody in the party. And even parliamentary candidates will contest. So we are now going to end up having a closed circuit sort of political party operation rather than an open. So once you allow this thing to happen at maybe the constituency level or at the parliamentary level, then by the time you realize it's going to extrapolate to the national level. And once we start doing that, we are going to close the door to participation and the people having a say in determining who lead them or who govern them.
Doc, another issue, we all know that the party is the giant whose shoulders anybody can ride on to power. Under the NDC, we had concerns that the party had ignored the grassroots. At the NPP's delegate conference, the President of the Republic and the former President made comments to the effect that they must know that they are members of the NPP, but they have the responsibility of satisfying the Ghanaian. And that boils down to the whole issue of whether, again, they will get time to satisfy the grassroots.
So I think it is very crucial that every party keep in touch with the grassroots. Because that's the basis, that's the strength, that's the power of the party. And one of the several research was done after the 2016 election. And one of the reasons that came up strongly, even in the Professor Kwesi Butcher report, if you read some of the recommendations, it shows that the party was completely, there was a disconnect between party and grassroots. And once that happens, the grassroots will definitely punish you for it. So I understand that there should be mechanisms to build that connection between party hierarchy and then the grassroots supporters. There should be a mechanism that will allow the grassroots to participate in decision-making processes. There should be a mechanism that will allow the grassroots to benefit from the investment that they have made in the party, whether it's through power, it's through effort, it's through even mounting the campaign or even guarding the ballot. They should benefit in a way. But the issue is, even in as much as we want this to happen, we should not do it purely based on, patron-client relationship or patrimonial politics. It should be based on competence.
But here is the case in Ghana. We have enough competent men and women within each of the parties. So if the NPP decides to even go by competence, they will still get enough competent people within the NPP.
So the issue is that the president made a statement on Saturday to the effect that the government cannot employ everybody to work. So people must understand that.
Okay.
What government seeks to do was to invest and open up the private sector for more jobs to be created so that people can find employment within that area rather than just looking at the state. And he even made a qualifying statement that the NPP is a liberal democratic party. And the liberal democratic party has to help the private sector to grow and create jobs from that area rather than creating jobs from the state. That is the work of what? The Social Democratic Party. So the issue now is that the state can't employ everybody. But the state has the responsibility, or government has the responsibility, to open up different sectors of the economy to be able to be triumphant and create jobs and employ people. So once everybody assumes that once my government is in power, I must be within the governing class, it cannot happen. It's not possible. But what political parties must understand is that they must inculcate and educate their followership to know that this is the reality.
Okay.
And what we can do is that we're going to empower you, we are going to empower the private sector to open up and grow so that everybody can find jobs to be able to do. If your party comes to power and is able to expand the private sector and you get unemployment, it's better. Just ask somebody who is working in the public sector. So this is what we must realize. And we should understand that in formation of government, when political parties win elections, they have to form government. And the formation of government, not everybody can be part. So the best brains and the people that the president have confidence in are those who are selected to govern.
Doc, we want to thank you very much for your time on Behind the News. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Dr. Seydou Alidou is a senior lecturer at the Department of Political Science, University of Ghana, Legon. We also have on the line the chairman of the 2017 NPP National Delegate Conference Planning Committee, FF Anto. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Fine evening.
Overall, how will you describe the program?
The program was a big success. From Friday to Sunday, all the events were so successful.
And what did the trick?
The organization of the conference itself, I think it was a big success. I'm grateful. I'm very, very grateful. I'm happy to God. I'm grateful to the Almighty. And so far, too, we haven't had any trouble. Everybody has arrived at their various constituencies safely. So we are thankful to God. Everybody who came to Cape Coast on Saturday and Sunday shows that, yes, we are MPP is a very strong party, and that we are going to maintain the central region for quite a long time.
The president made so many important comments. He indicated that the ability of the party to stay on for long will be dependent on the conduct of all appointees from national to the grassroots. You are a grassroots man. At the top, it appears everything is cool. But on the ground, is it possible this can be taken seriously?
I mean, yes, the president means business. I mean, that is the way to go. I mean, people look at party supporters and maybe they move away. They don't want to even associate themselves with the party. Right? And I think this is a very good advice to all party members that we should conduct ourselves properly. We should not allow people to feel bad for voting for Akufo-Addo. It's important. It's a very good admonition. And I think party members should take it serious. I mean, that is the only way to go. We should first be disciplined so that others can follow suit. We should be law-abiding so that other members of society can also follow suit. We don't have to break the law and what we expect others to do. If you want to have Akufo-Addo to govern properly. We believe in the rule of law. I mean, the party believes in the rule of law, not the rule of man. So we should make sure we do all our things according to the laws of this nation.
But doing that, you are a grassroots man. You dealt with people directly, and you knew there were people who were against what you were doing. You've been giving the cake. Now the president says, share the cake equally. And I'm sure the people you dealt with might not be happy. How do you convince them?
Well, they should understand it. You see, if you come to party politics, there's a need for a lot of education. Right. It is not only if MPP member decides to vote for an Akufo-Addo, he will never come to power. The other Ghanaians, floating voters, will think that Addo has got a very good program and they join the crusade. So the major task for government now is to make sure he is able to reposition the economy well so that we expand the economy and that people will be happy. For example, if we are able to achieve the free senior high school, it's going to benefit a lot of people, whether you are MPP man or an NDC, and that is going to benefit. That will show the difference between the two, and that will help our chances in winning the 2020 elections too. If we're able to create more food, like even the Champions time, we're able to export food to Upper Volta and those areas. Now we are importing food. We should be able to reverse it. But if there's a lot of food in the market, everybody will enjoy, the MPP man will enjoy, everybody, every Ghanaian will enjoy. And I think that is the vision of the president. You can't create jobs alone for the MPP people. That is not possible.
All right.
In a society like this.
The people were quite excited, at those watching from afar, particularly when the NDC representative came in the person of Kuku Anyidohu, who happens to be one of the quote-unquote tough guys. People thought that they were going to hoot at him or his comment, but we didn't see that. Is it that you pre-informed the people that, hey, keep quiet regardless of what they say?
Oh, there was not a serious education. People, delegates are mature people. Delegates in the room are executives of the party at the various constituencies, right? And so you expect them to understand that at every conference. So this is done even at the constituency level. Don't forget that for the last 2 months, we've been organizing constituency delegates conferences. And you invite people, NDC and other political parties to come. So this thing is not new to them. You know, obviously, they'll come and give a solidarity message. We did at the regional level. So it's not new to anybody that the NDC people will come there. And when he was even singing, NDC will come again. But the song looked good. And I saw most people trying to join in the chorus. So the initial stages, when he was talking about, they are uncomfortable, they're away. And people are happy after his speech. And when we ask them, they can ask for leave. So the deputy general, Obi Buahin, that saw them off. And there was no booing, there was nothing. Our politics is maturing. And we are praying to God that it goes on in that manner.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Thank you for talking to us.
Okay, thank you.
FF Anto is the chairman of the 2017 MPP National Delegate Conference Planning Committee. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941.
The alarm has blown and many farmers have discovered the invasive fall armyworm on their farm.
Do you know about the fall armyworm and how it can destroy your maize, rice, millet, sorghum or vegetable farms?
The fall armyworm is a pest that travels from America through the borders of different countries and is now found on many farms in Ghana.
The fall armyworm is not like any other worm you have experienced before, so don't treat it the same way you do for other known pests. It is important for you to know that this worm is truly the fall armyworm before you take an action to destroy it.
The nature of the fall armyworm is different from any other, and it is more deadly for your crops than any other pest we have experienced so far. So, please be vigilant. It is important to know that this worm attacks your maize from every stage because it is able to feed on your farm for all the stages of the growth of your maize crop. You must check on your maize farm every morning.
Walk through your farm. Make sure that your seedling, vegetation or flowering don't have a sign of the fall armyworm. The fall armyworm feeds throughout the day, but most active from 5 p.m. to early in the morning. As they feed on your farm, they leave their black droppings on there and cover themselves with the droppings.
The fall army worm has a dark head with an upside-down, pale Y-shaped mark on the front of the head. It has four dark spots that form square shapes close to the tail of its body. It has very smooth skin. If you find that the leaves of your crops are damaged with holes, or you suspect the presence of the fall army worm on your farm, look out for the worm. Early detection of the fall army worm is everything. Make an effort to save your farm from this pest. Visit your farm regularly to look for the signs of the fall army worm and act fast.
Quickly contact your local Agric Extension officer for help immediately, or call 020-201-9090 or 020-201-6060 or 020-201-4040. How early you detect the fall army worm will determine how much of your produce you can save.
Keep watch and detect the fall army worm now. This message is brought to you by the Ministry of Food and Agriculture and its partners.
Welcome back. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. To our next story, the minority in Parliament has waded into the comments by the Deputy Minister for Food and Agriculture and Member of Parliament for Achimodan, William Kwetu, to the effect that people in the North are difficult to deal with. The Deputy Minister has since retracted and apologized, yet that seems not to be enough to appease the offending party. Behind the News asks if there's anything beyond the apology in human interaction. Today, the minority NDC, some MPs held a press conference demanding the removal of the deputy minister. We have on the line the member of parliament for Sanerigu, Alhaji ABA Fuseni. He's a ranking member for the Communications Committee of Parliament. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Yeah, good evening and good evening to your listeners, my brother.
The deputy minister's comment has since been withdrawn, and I believe he has swallowed seed. So why are you still not satisfied?
Yeah, thank you very much. Let me first and foremost make a very important correction. The deputy minister did not just only say the people of the North are difficult people, but he imputed motives of fraud, thievery, and corruption against the good people of the three northern regions. If you listen to his statement very carefully, he indicated that these are people who are hatching up and peddling for suit, that their farms have been invaded by the army worm. And in reality, according to him, it's not true. And that they are just making up a case to as it were, fleece the government of resources to steal money from the state. That is the import of his statement. And so if you listen to him, well, he was not just even saying the people of the North are difficult, which itself is problematic. Because how are they difficult people? My brother, this is somebody who says that he has benefited from the generosity of the people for 27 years. He has lived off the generosity of the people of the North for 27 years. They have helped to mold his character and to shape him to what he is today. Now, if he has nothing positive that he can say for the people of the North, I think he could have done himself good by leaving them to their fate, but not to go and seek to, as it were, denigrate the image, the standing, and the integrity of the people of the North on the altar of thievery and fraud. I think that is the last thing anybody would have said that you can do to collectively to a people. And our demand accordingly is that as a minister of state, you ought to be very decorous. You ought to exercise a lot of humility. You ought to be truthful to the facts. You ought to ensure that your actions don't discriminate. This army worm menace is a menace that has afflicted the entire agriculture sector in the country, both in the North and the South. And so if our farmers as a whole have complained, I wonder how he could have singled out people from the North to in a very unprovoked manner, assail them and use these unprintable words on the people of the North.
The argument was that at the time this thing was heightened, it wasn't the planting season in the North. So if it wasn't the planting season, how on earth could army worms be invading farms?
When is the planting season in the North? It is not true. I can tell you that as far back as March, people planted in the North. As I tell you, I am also a farmer, as I speak to you now. My maize crop, some of which were devastated by the army worms. The early crops that some people made is up for harvesting. So it is not true. I'm sure that he's just trying to make up a case. As early as March, many farmers had planted. And so what is he talking about? It was not a planting season. When is the planting season in the north?
We are all human beings. We make mistakes, and the Quran and the Bible all talk about that. We should apologize when we sin even against our Maker. He will forgive us. The man has apologized.
I think the good books tell us that when we are going to do so, we should do so from a standpoint of remorse. That we must show sufficient remorse, and deep inside us, we will feel we have actually offended those we are seeing, and then ask for forgiveness. That is what it says. It should not say we should do it from a standpoint of hypocrisy, from an insincere standpoint, that we should wait until we are being assailed before we do it. That it is only when we feel threatened that we begin to ask, that we are apologizing and ask for forgiveness. Those are not sincere things the good books tell us. They tell us we should do it from the bottom of our hearts.
But how do you know it's not from the bottom of his heart?
It is an insincere apology. It bears the hallmarks of an insincere apology. Why am I saying so? When did he utter those words?
Friday night.
Thursday. It was on Thursday.
Okay.
On Thursday that he issued a statement. When did he take him to apologize?
Friday.
After a public outcry, when people started bashing him, when he saw that he was in the middle of an uncomfortable storm and that he was on the verge of getting into trouble. That is when he started, this is a sham of an apology. So this apology, no well-meaning northerner who has been seriously offended by these bellicose and abrasive statements he has made, we say that he thinks it's an sincere apology. It is not.
But you see, somebody will also say that.
My brother, you deliberately, as a matter of concern, listen to the interview. When the lady was even interviewing him, then drew his attention to the fact, this is a serious matter you are talking about. So you have facts to prove what you are saying. He said that I have lived with the people for 27 years. I know them, and I know what I'm talking about. So even when his attention was drawn to the bellicose statement, he refused. He still went ahead and said what he said. So that's why there's a saying that from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. He was saying what was truly inside him. And he meant everywhere that he said. So I am, many of us from the north, we are not convinced that this is a sincere apology.
Well, so on a lighter note, if I've sinned against you, I've apologized and you don't agree, is that not symptomatic of how difficult you are?
Oh, my brother, he is fantastic. He can say whatever. He has already insulted us. So he can say whatever he wants to say. But anybody with any grain of decency and who has proof on his side and who knows who the people of the North are, I can tell you that the people of the North are the most hardworking, the most truthful, the most sincere, and the most honest people you can get in this country. I am telling you, I am not saying because I'm from the North, but you ask anybody who has dealt with Northness. Are the most sincere, the most truthful, the most hardworking, and the less people prone to corruption that you can have it from anywhere else. So to go and assail people that you say you have lived for 27 years, if Northerners were so bad a people, how could he live with them for 27 years and be able to develop into the stature that he is today by his own admission? So you see that he's caught up in his own ways.
If he's not fired by the president, what will you do?
I am saying that, my brother, if somebody decides to strip you naked in public and takes you to his house, that he's after humiliating you in public, he's taking you to his house to clothe you. Is that a sincere effort? Can you, by any stretch of logic, call that sincere?
All right.
It is nowhere. That is why we say that as a minister of state, his utterances are unbecoming of a minister of state. His utterances don't jive with somebody who should hold high public office of that stature.
All right.
When you are a minister of state, you must speak to people with humility. You must speak the truth. You must ensure that your utterances don't divide the country. This is a very bellicose statement that has a tendency to divide this country.
All right.
This is a statement that has a tendency to whip up ethnic tensions.
Thank you very much.
A tribally divisive statement and tribal bigotry. We should not allow that to happen in our body politics.
All right.
And in this country.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Alhaji ABA Fuseni is a ranking member of the Communications Committee of Parliament and MP for Sanerigu. It's Behind the News. We are live on Radio Ghana. We also have on the line Reverend Dr. Samuel Walanyo Mensah. He's the presiding bishop of Christ White House Chapel and a fellow Institute of Chartered Economists, Ghana. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good blessed evening to all Ghanaians and all listening.
Well, in human interaction, we are bound to make mistakes. But when you make a mistake, what do you do?
I think all is well and done, and I think the start of it all is when one makes a mistake, an apology needs to be rendered. But you see, the issue we are discussing goes beyond that a bit, and this is happening because we lack moral values and education in our various systems. It is disheartening to hear that from a well-respected man and more or less somebody who is a mentor to a lot in our dear society. Because we are in the process of building the system to enhance national cohesion. And but then as we clearly heard from the gentleman, he has apologized, which also shows much maturity. And I think that generally we need to forgive him. We need to tread also cautiously and be wary that it should not be over-politicized. Equally, some people also make similar statements or comments and over time, which equally needs to be condemned in all unsensitive terms. We need to respect others' dignity and respect their values as well. And when all this is lacking, then we are heading towards crisis.
Well, but out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh, and God has acknowledged that fact. And psychologists will tell you that what we call slip of tongues and dreams are actually things that have been concentrated in our conscious mind. So automatically, once a while, they come out. That could be accidental. Why don't we treat them as such, but rather take them personal?
There are two ways to this issue. The first is just applying the level of faith to it, and the other one is the social problems that it created in the mindset of people. And I think the social impact, the negative impact, is what we are focusing more on this time. But I use the time to equally extend my voice to our brothers and sisters in the three regions of the North to demonstrate extra maturity and tolerance in the face of these great provocations. And we should try as much as possible to resist the temptation of payback, insults, and attacks in order to foster unity and social development. I know issues like this is not easy to forgo, but we should treat this as a trash. And it is then that we'll be able to see results. We are in the process of building a united Ghana, and a comment like this is nothing to write home about. But I think that we should just treat it as one of those things, just an error, because we are bound to make errors, and we should treat it as such.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. Thank you very much for talking to us, Reverend Man of God.
Thank you very much.
Reverend Dr. Samuel Walenyo Mensah is the presiding bishop of Christ White House Chapel and a fellow Institute of Chartered Economists, Ghana. It's Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Keep your messages coming on 0266-026-941. Some of your messages here. Lamte King Rashid Dansoman Estes says, I support the demonstrators. The deputy minister should resign for the sake of NPP chances of 2020. AU Farouk in Tamale. Good evening to you, George. It is interesting. Ghana's democracy is growing day by day. I love the representation of the opposition parties at the NPP's delegate conference. I urge the president and his vice to stop the talking and fulfill the promises they made to Ghanaians. Mashud Kalpana Kukum in Tamale says, NPP SMS group president, actually is your position. Hi, George. NPP government has done its best so far. I do believe the president's remarks to combat corruption. He speaks with conviction. Please, my brothers in the northern region, you should forgive the deputy minister of Agric, Zibo, when she sent in that. At least President Akufo-Addo can do to appease this savage and remarks of the minister of Agric. Adams Harun in Tamale. Your words are too bad for this show. Good evening. The deputy minister of Agric does not. He is very competent to be. I don't get you. He's very competent to be competent. God is answering him for nothingness. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We have on the line Abu Kasangbata. He is the acting CEO of Savannah Development Think Tank. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening, George, and good evening to your charity.
Your organization was among the first to come out to ask the deputy minister to apologize. He has since apologized. Is that okay for you now?
Yeah, George, now that our deputy minister of state has profusely apologized for those comments, it is difficult to comment on that matter. All the same, one must make some comment for the guidance of posterity. You see, George, ethnocentric comments and racial bigotry is a dangerous thing, especially if one occupies a position of trust, an important sector like agriculture, health, and other ministries, especially crucial ministries in the country. Especially in his case, he's dealing with all kind of people in the country. Therefore, once his approach must be the type that is all embracing without classifying anybody with any inconvenient label or tribal or religious label. But he went beyond. You see, the founding fathers of our great country made us to understand that Ghana, where we all belong, is made up of one country, one people, with one common destiny. Regardless to our religious differences, ethnic differences, we are one people. So for me, all ministers who kept or keep in place to assist the president to achieve and execute his flagship programs and policies and programs to achieve and also accelerate economic growth and development in the country, especially the NPP development agenda, must be very cautious in their approach in dealing with issues, especially at the national level. As leaders, we must show leadership skills by showing emotional maturity, by being sensitive to the feeling of others and act such a way that we don't make statements that will trigger emotions. So for me, in today's world, George, you agree with me, it is not so much about academic qualification that makes you a hero. It is so much about emotional intelligence, such as, you know, it, as a balance between leadership and governing. Governance system is difficult, but it's very simple to manage because you are dealing with masses.
Okay.
It's the same people from the northern part of Ghana that voted massively for the New Patriotic Party to win. Now that our deputy minister has, as I said, made that statement, for me, we need, as a country, a northernest. Yes, the apology is good, but we think that His Excellency the President ought to expedite action. If the deputy minister indeed refused to resign or tender in his resignation, but the president who believe with unity and somebody who preach with the philosophy of this country that we can only strive to develop this country through unity and peace.
All right.
So then ought to expedite action. But George, let me quickly make a point.
Briefly.
Yes, it's just going to be brief. I think that I listened to the Reverend Father you interviewed, that people make similar statements over and over. But we should bear in mind that once you are a minister of faith, you have been paid by the poor taxpayers' money. And I made a point, the first day you interviewed me on the same platform, I said, His Excellency, the Vice President himself, is affected.
All right.
He tells you that he undermined his own Vice President.
All right.
So how are they going to accelerate economic growth in the northern part of Ghana? I think the apology is not enough.
Unfortunately, our time is running up soon.
Exactly. No, just a word. We expect the President to expect action. The President should not be quiet.
All right.
He said he's a father for all.
Okay. Thank you.
Ghanaians should not be citizens. We should be citizens. We should not be spectators. We want the President to ask.
Thank you very much.
And as a well-organized body from the Northern Savannah Ecological Zone, we want the President to expert action on this.
Thank you very much for your time on our show tonight. We are very grateful. Abu Kasambata is the Acting Chief Executive Officer of the Savannah Development Policy Think Tank. Moving on to other stories. The devastating mass light and flood disaster in Sierra Leone that led to the death of some 400 people, with many displaced, has raised very critical concerns about the heavy concentration of settlements on hilltops and outside the capital, Accra. Tonight, Behind the News takes a look at whether or not a possible situation of such can be contained in Ghana. Meanwhile, our reports are that authorities in Burkina Faso intend spilling the Bagre Dam. So how ready is NADMO for this possible event? We have on the line Abu Ramadan. He is the Deputy Director General in charge of operations of NADMO. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
And thank you for having me, as well.
Is it when actually is this dam going to be spilled?
It can be spilled at any given moment or any point in time from now, because the dam, for it to get to its critical stage for it to be filled, it must get to 235 meters before the authorities there would spill. But currently, as I'm talking to you, as of this morning's reading, the dam level stands at 231.5 meters. So it can happen any time, it can happen any moment between now onwards. So we are putting measures in place to make sure that the impact is not heavily felt.
But is it automatic that when the dam is spilled, there will be flooding in affected areas? I mean, areas that it passes.
I can't say it's automatic. It depends on the volumes that will be spilled. The most important is the volumes. But regardless of the volumes that is spilled, currently the water levels, as we've gone around and seen for ourselves, the water levels we've seen all over. We went all the way to the confluence around the Sibila area. We went there, and the water levels are quite high. So a little spill would have an impact up there to some very few communities. But if the volumes are high, the tendency of it affecting larger communities is very likely and very, very right.
So what precautionary measures are on the ground?
Currently, we are doing proper assessments on the ground. We're looking at, first and foremost, safe havens for communities that are very close to the riverbank. Safe havens for them in terms of highland, where when the dam is spilled, we can move them there for them not to be affected. Secondly, we are looking at alternative livelihood, and all these people who are by the riverbanks are all farming, and for that matter, they've grown their crops and they expect to harvest. But because of the late rains too, as well, so their alternative source of livelihood is something that is high on our minds as well too, so which we are also looking into. And other sort of rescue operations that we can do. We came along with rescue boats and other rescue equipment that we would need when the flooding occurs. So these are some of the things I'm sure would come to play when the flooding happens.
Well, I don't know whether I should say you have not been that lucky. You took office and you are working day in, day out. Problem here, problem there. Are you stressed?
I'll call it stress. It's a call to duty. It's a call to service to Mother Ghana. And for that matter, we must put our back to it and make sure the Ghanaian people are not heavily embedded by natural disasters. So I'll say it's a call to duty. It's a must. It's a must. And that's why I accepted the role in the first place. I didn't accept it for us to come and sit in the office and just do nothing.
All right.
This is what we have to do.
All right. I want to thank you very much for your time on our show. Very grateful, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Abu Ramadan is Deputy Director General in charge of operations at NADMO. Some of your text messages: Ghana must discover sustainable ways to deal with the annual Bagri Dam spillage to avert any disaster. Delanyo Agbe in Pedriase. We have also on the line Dr. Prosper Larry. He's an environmentalist and a surveyor with the University of Development Studies. Good evening and welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Doc, it's not new to us. Year in, year out, we know of this Bagri Dam possible spillage, yet we keep facing the problem. What could be the problem?
Spillage, you get to realize that for a very long time, the back and forth due to the fact that when they cannot contain their water, even after several attempts, and they increased it by 1.5. Yet till date, you still find out that the statistics are not good enough.
So why is the fault coming? Is it because the people are not obeying precautionary measures, or because our surveyors, our planners are not doing their work well?
No, not at all. You see, one of the problems is that when you get to the low-lying areas and you see the volume of water, most of the collaboration that exists between Ghana and Burkina Faso is the UN Convention on the Law of Non-Navigational Use of International Water Course says that there must be an obligation not to cause significant harm to the parties that are involved. So even though we have it as a responsibility to do some re-engineering, because saying that people should stay off within 50 meters of resettlement when this water is going to be discharged is not enough. But you get to realize that the Ghanaian authorities are not also exerting so much pressure on the Burkinabe authorities to be able to know that they cannot just at any time just spill the water just like that. Once we do some effective monitoring with them, we will know the levels of water at each time, and this water can be discharged intermittently and within stages. Not you just tell somebody within 1 week we are going to discharge water. Ask the people what's the volume of water to be discharged. We don't know. So even though you can do some planning, you can do some re-engineering, but this collaboration must be done, as I said, because the UN Convention even mandates the authority that is spilling the water, in this case, Burkinabe authorities, must even take it a delight to work on the compensation on our people that are there, because they are causing the inconvenience. But you see that they are more glued to their national benefits than what happens to us. And occasionally we are looking at ways of solving it. So yes, we can do planning, we can do the survey and other things, but the collaboration must also be done, because consistently they have increased the level of their water such that the amount of water they let out to Ghana will reduce. But yet, year in, year out, we still find this spillage causing a lot of devastation.
So you think they should compensate us? Is it not common sense that if you are running into danger, safety first?
No, that's why I'm telling you that this is a treaty. You know, if you even follow one of the reasons why the Burkinabe's dam, that area near our white border, it has a whole lot of implications. So even though this, you know, remember, this is an international treaty and it's a convention. We can move ourselves, all right. But I also think that we're all members of ECOWAS and we all look for the common good of our country. So yes, common sense is making that more to take those interventions. But must year in, year out, must we continue doing that? Shouldn't we sit down and see the pragmatic steps and scientific methods of trying to find out the volumes of water, the monitoring, and what is supposed to be done,
right,
Rather than for them to say, oh, we are letting out the water each and every now and then? No, we need to sit and plan with them.
Okay.
So that we can know the volume of water at each time that needs to be discharged, and we do some re-engineering.
Okay.
We divert the courses, maybe if it needs to have a dam or dredge the white water, so that it can contain it and not move to the people living nearby.
Thank you very much, Doc, for talking to us. Dr. Prosper Larry is the University for Development Studies. He is a surveyor and environmentalist. As My producers have been Asibi Bangu, Ikela Setia, John Poby, Berland, Elom Tete, and Sewell, Nanama Ajikum. Gifty Broom was our sound engineer. I am George Asikri. Good night.